Director General Lemy and Deputy Director General Valentin Rugwabiza. The Director General will have a brief opening statement, and then the DG and Valentin will take your questions. We'll have about 30 minutes. Director General, please.
Thanks, Keith. As you know, we're just finished this General Council session, which was closing this first Aid for Trade Global Review. The first time international organizations spanning the World Bank, the IMF, UNDP, UNCTAD, OECD, Regional Development Bank, including the Islamic Development Bank, ILO, UPO, and others have got together here in the WTO to send a strong message that they stand together in moving forward aid for trade. You had a chance to see and hear this yourselves yesterday. As you well know, the WTO's core business is about creating trade opportunities through market opening and equitable disciplines. But, as you probably also know, we do not create trade flows. We pull with a string obstacles to trade from various places, but you can't push with a string. And that's where Aid for Trade comes in. Aid for Trade is about generating trade flows and making, through various capacity improvements, trade feed into growth and growth into poverty alleviation for developing countries. So it's a distinct, separate agenda from the round. The mandates we were given were given for the round in 2001, for it for trade in 2005. There is no ex ante conditionality of any sort between the round and aid for trade. Different tract, a firewall, but in reality a potential synergy. What we're trying to do is, at the end of the day, enhance donors' contribution. That's the mandate we got, mobilizing more resources for aid for trade. But we know that in order to do that, we have to gather a number of elements, parameters, structures, people around the table, and that's what we've been doing. In terms of numbers, you have this Aid for Trade at a glance review, where you'll find the numbers, and we are glad we could do it because it might help you translating these complex issues for readers, viewers or listeners. You've seen the big numbers. We now have a baseline which is the 2.0205 average for aid for trade, which is to the tune of $20 billion, and we know that what we've heard, the commitments that have been taken or confirmed takes us somewhere to the tune of $30 billion for 2010. Does this suffice to match the commitments which were taken at Gleneagle? Probably not, and more to come. But for the moment, I think we can roughly say that we are on track in terms of commitments. What we've also heard is, and that's essential, a huge involvement of recipient countries who now have taken new steps to clarify their priorities, to stabilize them, to discuss a number of these priorities at regional level, and we all know that this regional level is more and more crucial as international division of labor proceeds. when the port of Dar es Salaam is jammed, it's not only Tanzania who has a problem, but it's also Botswana, Rwanda, Uganda. And that's a reality we have to cope with. Now, I know that issues like monitoring and evaluation and having the right numbers or the right data basis will not make headlines, but I need a bit of your understanding for the time we spend on that, because it also is the benchmark against which progress can be measured, including by you. We have to provide you with a number that allow you all to make the right judgment, which is one of the next steps which we've agreed. What is our intention in terms of next steps? Basically, two fields of progress. First, the numbers, the sort of analytical toolbox. What we've heard, and we will certainly take this on board, even if it sometimes slows down the production number, what we've heard repeatedly during these 2 days is that developing countries also want to own the numbers. It's a fact that most of the numbers which are produced until now are produced by donors, and they are, as expected, influenced by the constituencies to which donors report. This is something we need to improve. We cannot, in looking at these numbers, whether there are financial flows, whether there are performance indicators, whether there are results indicators, rely on methodologies which are only donor-driven. And there is progress to be made in this direction, and that's one of the things we need to factor in our number crunching as we also improve, and the OECD people are very good at that, depending on the feedback we get on our number, the next version being better. So that's the first area. The second one is to land this exercise in more practicalities, more country focus, more region focus, and more sector focus. And sector-wise, I mean, we've now heard repeatedly infrastructures, transport, energy, telecoms, customs facilitation, trade finance, sanitary and phytosanitary standards are priorities which come again, again, and again, and in which we now need to dig together with other international organizations. That's what we will do next year, and I said to the General Council a few minutes ago that the formula of a regional aid for trade reviews, which has worked well this time, notably because of the heavy involvement of regional development banks in Africa, Asia, and Latin America, and we can probably extend that to other regions, will be replicated in 08. Last point, and then I'll go to your questions. In terms of ambience, you've witnessed that yourself. It's an area where there's a lot of cooperation, very little frictions, and I must say I'm extremely grateful to all our colleagues in other organizations that they've succeeded in sort of mastering the sort of normal bureaucratic frictions that appear when people start coordinating, monitoring, or evaluating. I think we've succeeded, which was a first step, not the whole of the exercise, but a first step in establishing aid for trade as a priority in the trade community, in the development community, in the finance community, in the planning community, and that for the first time since at least my professional experience has shown, connecting together trade people, finance people, development people, planning people can yield a lot of improvement just by establishing the necessary connection and the necessary trust between these actors. And after all, connection and trust is something that takes back to our core business in the WTO. Thanks for your attention. We now have a bit of time for questions and answers.
First question, please, for Sheila Mathrani. Didn't you have your finger up, Sheila? Please go ahead.
Well, how many heads of international institutions came here, and what was the reaction, particularly of the Asian Development Bank?
I mean, I don't have a number. My scoreboard is not the number of people I have at lunch or during a meeting, but I mean, most of you were there yesterday. I don't think we've ever gathered such a large number of heavyweights in this business in the WTO. Asian Development Bank has been on board from the very beginning. If you've looked at the number, you might have noticed that on the sort of 20 billion of baseline rate for trade that we use, Asia itself is for a larger part of these 20 billion than Africa and Latin America together. Asia is in the tune of 11 on this 2021, and the rest is for Latin America, Asia, and some Central European countries. So, aid for trade, infrastructure building, capacity building, knowledge building is something which the Asian Development Bank has been doing for years. We saw that when we were together in Manila in this review which we co-sponsored, and the headquarters of the Asian Development Banks are in Manila. No coincidence that we started there. So very good support, very good push. And what I understand is happening on in the Asian Development Bank is that in the old times it was the management of the Asian Development Bank who was sort of pushing its members on aid for trade. The thing has now moved the other way around. It's the members, the board members, the countries who are now are pushing the management on aid for trade, and that's exactly what we try and do.
Question, Jonathan, please.
Yes, what reassurances do you have that the planned increase in aid for trade to 30 billion will not simply be a diversion of other money that would have gone into overseas development aid in other sectors?
Well, I mean, we have no assurance of that, but we can track it. And we can track it rather simply. The DAC numbers are there, and the proportion of aid for trade in overall development assistance is tracked by our numbers. And by the way, if you look at the 2005 baseline, which is the average we are using, during this period, aid for trade was a decreasing proportion of overall development assistance. Now, that may be that debt alleviation has played a role in this, but my short answer to your short question is this shows in the numbers we produce.
Brad, please, and then Jamil.
What types of aid were decided not to be aid for trade? what were excluded from the basket, and is there some sort of understanding of the quantifiable effect that Aid for Trade had in the benchmark period? Can you say how much that produced in exports or trade growth?
Now, the answer to your first question is in this booklet. I'll give you the page. It's just before the chapter on methodological considerations. It's the tables which are from page 60 on. And you can find the various definitions of what we include in Aid for Trade, the various, by difference, definitions of what's not included in Aid for Trade, and the sector identified contributions that are gathered by the DAC is approximately 60 to 65 billion a year on a total of ODA, which is probably an order of magnitude of 100 billion a year. So we focus on one part of that, which fits with the definitions which you get in the methodological table, and we've discussed the methodologies, and you know, there is no table of the law in methodology for this sort of thing. It's a work in progress. You have this. You can ask questions, improve it if there are things which are wrong in there, like anybody. Again, it's work in progress. But it's reasonably stabilized now after the 18 months which we've passed on that. And World Bank, UNDP, UNCTAD, and OECD, us, have the sort of same methodological sort of frame now. But, as I've often said, we've outsourced most of the technical work to the OECD experts, because that's where the expertise worldwide is in the development committee of the OECD. On your second question, we do not have yet indicators of performance or results that could link a certain volume of Aid for Trade to a certain volume of trade. This is in the making. It's formidably complex because the volumes of trade depend on lots of factors, currency valuations, conjunctural determinations, the evolution of competition by another exporting country, and many of these factors, I mean, are not related to Aid for Trade. So it's complex. We can, of course, improve the statistical apprehension of this, but that's why we need to work more on indicators, and that's why we need recipient countries to be part of this work of indicators. For the moment, we have a few things extracted from various panels or polling or inquiries. Part of, for instance, the World Bank Doing Business report, not all, but part of that. If you take an indicator like the time it takes to clear a container in a country, it's a reasonable approximation. And if we invest in trade facilitation and in customs modernization, this shows. So that's a relatively simple case. We have 5, 10, 15 indicators of this kind in mind, but it takes a bit of time to move people in this performance direction. But, you know, World Bank has started doing this, the IMF does it, a number of Nordic countries do it, so we can move on this.
Jamil, please.
Salami. I have a question on the use of this Aid for Trade. We've seen for years, actually, that food aid is a way of subsidizing also the exports of developed countries. What assurances do you have that the money that is going to be sent to aid for, I mean, for the Aid for Trade will not be, let's say, conditioned to investments by the countries who gave the money to buy the equipment or the technical assistance or whatever you're going to offer from themselves, in a way subsidizing it again. Then we will need a new round to negotiate rules on aid for trade. Is that, I mean, how you guarantee this?
I don't guarantee this. This huge question on whether development assistance is tied or untied is still open. There is no international agreement that would bind sovereign Westphalian nation states into a rule that development assistance is untied as from date X. And I don't think there's any prospect for getting that soon, even with an extremely activistic view of what the international system can produce. So, no guarantee of this. There are codes of conduct. There are OECD principles for OECD members. The Americans have gone in the direction of de-linking. The Europeans did it under the influence of the Nordics quite a long time ago. So, no guarantee. And in terms of conditionality, we know that what we're trying in Aid for Trade, we're not changing each and every of the machineries that has been established to provide for official development assistance. This is an option which was considered during the work of the task force, which worked last year under the womanship of Maya Horn. And at the end of the day, the orientation that was taken is we're not going to recreate a new big machinery with its own conditionality. So we coordinate, we improve the synergies, we make it more transparent so that donors and recipients have a sort of clearer matching capacity. In the case of food aid, that's an area where new disciplines will appear as a result of the round. They've been negotiated since 2001. And they are based on the sort of non-commercial displacement concept. So that's an area where we will have, if and when we finish the round, binding rules that clearly go in the direction of cash more than kind, and the kind will be, and that's what's already in the papers which Crawford circulated, including last week, is much more disciplined than it used to be. But I don't think we will go this time about food aid in saying, well, if we sell something, then you will buy some of that or the other way around. I mean, that's at this stage outside of our remit, assuming it would be wishable.
Yes, please, on the left.
Oui, qu'est-ce que vous répondez à ceux qui disent que l'aide pour le commerce est une compensation auparavant à l'impasse dans le round de Doha? Et quand est-ce que vous prévoyez une conclusion du round de Doha maintenant? Parce qu'on entend dire qu'on parle du mois de juin ou du mois de juillet de l'année prochaine pour un premier accord.
Sur la première question, je réponds pour l'essentiel à des journalistes qui me posent la question de savoir comment je réponds à cette question. C'est une question que je n'ai eue qu'une fois en provenance d'une organisation non gouvernementale et que j'ai eue 55 fois depuis un an. Donc il faut croire qu'il y a des gens qui ont une énorme capacité à vous faire poser cette question. Parce que j'ai répondu, re-répondu et re-re-répondu. Il y a dans certaines organisations non gouvernementales une inquiétude qui, en quelque sorte, suppose, dans le concept tel que je le comprends, que parmi les 151 membres de l'OMC, les 120 et quelques qui sont des pays en voie de développement pourraient accepter un résultat de la négociation qui ne serait pas à la hauteur de leurs attentes, ceci étant contrebalancé par ailleurs par des promesses d'assistance financière. Bon, c'est une plaisanterie. Hein ? C'est une plaisanterie. Il n'y a rien de cela. Les pays en développement l'ont dit, répété, je l'ai dit et répété, les donneurs l'ont dit et répété, ces deux mandats sont distincts, on ne parlait pas d'aide for trade quand on a démarré la négociation en 2001, on a commencé à en parler sérieusement à Hong Kong en 2005, c'est simplement, il n'y a aucune conditionnalité ex ante entre l'aide pour le commerce et le résultat du round. C'est simplement la prise en compte petit à petit du fait que pour beaucoup de pays en développement, ce qui ressort d'une négociation, c'est-à-dire de l'accès au marché, comme je l'ai dit, ça ne se traduit pas dans la réalité, et aussi longtemps qu'ils n'ont pas les capacités de profiter de ces accès au marché. Voilà. C'est aussi simple que ça. Je crois qu'il ne faut pas voir des théories du complot partout. Je comprends très bien que les gens aient des inquiétudes, mais je ne vois rien dans les faits, rien dans ce qui a été accompli, rien dans ce qui a été dit, rien dans nos projets, rien dans les projets de la Banque mondiale, de la CNUSED, du programme des Nations Unies pour le développement, de l'Organisation des Nations Unies pour le développement industriel ou pour l'agriculture, qui ressemble à ça. C'est une idée qui me paraît étrange, en tout cas fondée sur aucune réalité, et je crois qu'il y a d'amples éléments pour montrer qu'il ne s'agit pas de ça. Sur votre seconde question, est-ce qu'on peut conclure la négociation qu'on a entamée à Doha en 2001 l'année prochaine? Je pense effectivement que c'est possible. Est-ce que ça passe par un accord préalable sur ce qu'on appelle dans notre jargon les modalités en matière agricole et industrielle? Oui. Nous sommes toujours sur cette séquence qui est celle que les membres ont décidé de suivre, qui consiste à passer par ce spasme sur les modalités subvention agricole, tarif industriel, avant de finir le reste de l'agenda. Est-ce que ce spasme interviendra avant la fin de cette année? Non. Je crois que c'est maintenant acquis. Est-ce qu'il faudra que ça intervienne au début de l'année prochaine pour que la conclusion interviennent sur l'ensemble des sujets interviennent l'année prochaine? Oui, je pense que c'est ce genre de timing que nous avons en tête.
La prochaine question est pour Assis. Allez-y.
Monsieur Lamy, est-ce que vous avez reçu ou vous avez constaté quel signe de flexibilité de part de certains pays comme les États-Unis ou d'autres dans les domaines agricoles, dans la mesure où on voit que les prix des produits agricoles sont de plus en plus hauts et ça pourrait peut-être faciliter justement un compromis plus fort pour couper les subventions vu que les producteurs n'ont pas autant besoin et ça semble être un changement structurel dans les marchés agricoles internationaux. La deuxième question, que c'est en vérité c'est un complément, est-ce que vous voyez que ça, la hausse des prix agricoles pourrait peut-être stimuler justement une anticipation de la fin de round?
Vaste question. Je crois qu'il y a dans la hausse des denrées agricoles sur le marché international, il y a un ensemble de facteurs, certains d'ordre structurel, certains d'ordre conjoncturel. Quelle est exactement la part des deux? Les données climatiques plutôt conjoncturelles, encore que maintenant des gens disent que les données climatiques deviennent structurelles, notamment en termes de sécheresse. Tout ce qui est concurrence avec les bioénergies, est-ce que c'est conjoncturel, est-ce que c'est structurel? Bon, il y a un mix des deux, en tout cas il y a sûrement une part structurelle, mais simplement personne ne sait la mesurer correctement. Et donc mon sentiment, c'est que le temps de ces évolutions, et notamment de la part conjoncturelle de ces évolutions qui sont celles qui apparaissent dans les médias, et le temps de l'OMC ne sont pas les mêmes. À l'OMC, on a commencé à discuter en 1985 de disciplines qui seront probablement valables jusqu'en, disons, 2010. Hein ? Et donc, ceci fait quelque chose de l'ordre de 25 ans. Quand on a commencé à réfléchir sur les premières disciplines en matière agricole, dans les années 85, juste avant de lancer l'Uruguay Round, on avait un paysage et des concepts qui sont ceux qui ont servi de base à des règles qui, si on termine le round, le suivant, sont encore en vigueur en 2009. Hein. Et donc, inévitablement, les acteurs qui influent sur ces négociations, les gens qui prennent des positions, les ministres, les négociateurs, les gouvernements, ceux qui, derrière, les poussent dans une direction ou dans une autre, ils ne se déterminent pas sur les 6 mois, l'année, ni même les 5 ans. Hein ? Le temps dans lequel nous fonctionnons, le temps de la régulation du commerce international, est un temps lent. C'est un temps de très longue structure par rapport au problème des denrées alimentaires. Et en tout cas, ceux qui résistent à des disciplines supplémentaires, que ce soit en matière de subventions, ceux qui résistent à la baisse des tarifs, qui acceptent souvent des baisses de tarifs de court terme, parce qu'effectivement, si ça soulage le problème des prix alimentaires, si vous écoutez ce qu'ils disent, ils vous disent, nous, on n'est pas du tout sûr que ceci va durer. Donc je pense que l'un dans l'autre, ça n'a pas d'effet, ni d'effet anesthésiant, si je puis dire, ni d'ailleurs d'effet consistant à pousser, sauf à la marge. Il est possible que certains exportateurs agricoles se soient un peu moins concentrés sur la nécessité de traiter ces questions, compte tenu du fait que ça va très bien. Je pense que ça n'est que très marginal pour une raison essentielle qui est que nous ne fonctionnons pas dans les mêmes échelles temporelles.
We have time for one more questions? Yes, please.
Excuse me for this straight question. Is it right to say that there is no hope that there would be any kind of agreement or breakthrough or whatever before the end of this year?
I mean, there's no good question or bad question or straight questions or non-straight questions. Huh? What are the others if your question is a straight question? It's only about the answers. I don't expect a what you call a breakthrough, which would be a major development in the negotiation that would materialize by a sort of formal agreement before the end of this year. It's cooking, it's moving, and I think those of you who follow both agriculture and the NAMA negotiation know that. It's on the front burner, no doubt about this, but it takes a bit of time. And the conventional wisdom and the sort of view we've established is that rather than producing half-baked compromise proposals, the final baking of which might be bumpy, members prefer to do a good, long, sometimes slow, cooking, which will take us into next year, both for the production of compromise papers and a fortiori for their adoption. It's slow, but some civilizations know that very good cooking can sometimes be very slow.
Thanks to all of you very much.